Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Dr. Fred Murarkey, Emergency Department Medical Director at UPMC Hammond. Doctor, thanks for joining us. What is your position at UPMC Hammond, and have you always worked in emergency?
Yep, so I'm the medical director who oversees the emergency department at UPMC Hammond. And yes, I've always worked in emergency services. I finished up around 2001 in Pittsburgh and came to Erie and have been here in the emergency department ever since.
Was it always your goal to end up working in the emergency department?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, it was either emergency services or some degree of cardiac care, and emergency services allowed me to do all different types of cardiac care in addition to other types of care.
Doctor, with the warm weather and summer vacations approaching, what are the most frequent injuries you see in the emergency department this time of year?
So I think by far, it's a multitude of things and not just one. I mean, we'll see traumas go up just because traumas become more common and people are outside and there's different influences, anything from alcohol to, you know, environmental things that can cause issues. So we'll typically see trauma-related emergencies. We'll typically see emergencies related to people utilizing things that they probably shouldn't be utilizing mechanical things for, such as alcohol-related injuries and so on. We'll see a fair amount of heat-related emergencies. Most of those are fortunately are heat exhaustion and not the typical or the really concerning emergencies such as heat stroke. And then we'll also see a number of orthopedic injuries and, you know, a number of orthopedic injuries that come from trampoline use, fractures, neck injuries, femur fractures. And lastly, and something we often don't like to see, is drownings. We'll see drownings just because we have a lake, we have pools, and people just get busy and kids are quick and they can get into trouble real quick. So we'll see a host of different emergencies.
Your department is really how people judge the hospital, isn't it?
Yeah, I can, and it's a great point to express upon. You know, emergency departments are the front door of the hospital. It's how people come into the hospital system. You may think the front door is where everybody comes in. It's not. They may come in for some elective type things, but the majority of work that comes into the hospital is usually through the emergency department. We account for the highest number of admissions in the hospital, and that's year over year. And we really, really take care of the community. You know, and typically when I know something's going on, I typically hear it in the community. So if there's a customer service issue in the emergency department, I hear it in the community. I hear it from friends. I hear it from family. I hear it from people who see me at the mall or at the park. So it's really interesting how the perception is of emergency departments as just a unit. The emergency departments are mainstream of the hospital.
Can you comment on what this emergency department excels at?
Yeah. I mean, this emergency department here has been really a diamond in the rough. You know, it's when I first came to town in 2001, I'll be honest, it wasn't the greatest place to receive care. It was very backdated. But since 2001, you know, the previous medical director and myself, we went on this just spearheading mission to really revolutionize what that department has done. And we've really changed things from basic care to state-of-the-art care. You can now come here and receive state-of-the-art trauma care that you can't get in other areas, quite frankly. Same thing with cardiac care. You can receive cardiac care and receive treatments that systems, the Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, and so on, can't even match our numbers because we're so efficient at it. And we've gotten so good at building the processes to make it work. And it all comes down to taking care of patients. We did everything to take care of patients. And when you do things to take care of patients, everything else falls in line.
At Hammond, you really get that large city care, don't you?
Absolutely. And just to reinforce on that, I go to meetings and programs and seminars where people talk and promote their initiatives and throughput initiatives, and they produce results that would keep me up at night because I would not be able to sleep knowing people sat in my department so long waiting for care, whereas it becomes a standard in these other cities and other towns. So, you know, when they produce results, I look at them and I look at our results and I keep quiet until it's the right time to really shine off or show off what we do here. And we produce throughput metrics that aren't seen across the country for the volumes we have, for the level of acuity we have, for the number of beds we have. We are half the size of an emergency department that we should be for the volumes we see and the acuity we see. Yet we do it in half the size, and we built the processes to make sure that we can take care of people very timely at results that are better than the nation, and we produce outcomes that are just as good, most of the time better than what the nation can do.
As a physician, do you have any advice to give to people about how to avoid some of these summer injuries?
I sure can give advice. So, pet peeve, drownings, trampolines. I can't tell you how many kids get injured on trampolines because parents just don't watch. And it's very upsetting because we'll see kids come in with neck fractures and become paralyzed. We'll see kids die. We'll see kids with horrible fractures to long bones, like an arm or a leg, that really cause them disability later in life. And people think putting up a net around a trampoline is the answer. It's not. You have to be there. You have to physically watch what's going on. Same thing in a pool. Now, I'll be honest, I had a family member when I was young who was 2 years old who drowned in a pool. It sticks with you, and it sticks with those parents. And you would be amazed at how quick a kid can get into trouble. So if you have a pool, don't leave it. Make sure you're there. Be observant. Don't just lay down in a chair and sunbathe. Be observant and see what you're doing. See what's happening in that pool. If they're out of the pool eating, make sure someone's watching the pool if somebody's doing something that is going to distract your attention from it. Same thing with the trampolines. You know, don't walk in the house and think everything's fine, because you will hear that kid fall and break a bone, or you'll hear that kid fall and scream because they injured himself. Supervision over those two injuries in and of itself, or those two processes in and of itself, can really prevent injury, harm, and even death in those populations with those types of, you know, environmental and, you know, household toys, so to speak. The other thing is alcohol. Summertime, everybody's outside having beers, they're at events and so on. You know, there's a lot to be said for pacing yourself. There's a lot to be said for designated drivers. There's a lot to be said for taxis and Ubering just to keep people safe. People seem to have resistance when they get themselves in trouble, and they have to self-reflect. And if you can prevent the resistance to that moment, you can really keep your family safe. So that would be my advice, to really think about what you're doing, making sure that you're providing the supervision over the things you have in your own household and in control of. The other thing I would think that we would really want to, you know, raise attention to, and there were years ago when we had a motorcycle helmet repeal law, and there's a lot of controversy around this, but when you see the injuries that come in from it, a motorcycle helmet can save a life. It can prevent a disabling brain injury. I'm not saying you're not going to get harmed if you get in a bike accident with a helmet, but you will have significant less disability than without the helmet. So the reality of it is, and I don't know why people have this belief that it's, you know, freedom, this, that, or the other thing to make it so that they can ride bikes without helmets. But for sure, don't put your kid on a bike without a helmet. It just would make no sense, especially a motorcycle or so on. And then the other thing that we have to start to think about, because Memorial Day is coming and 4th of July is coming, is fireworks. And, you know, fireworks have now, I don't know if the word is legal, but you can get them in Pennsylvania. Not to mention you can go over the borders in Ohio and New York State to get fireworks, and people bring them back in. So fireworks safety is something that's really important. You know, there's gear to wear when you're utilizing fireworks. There's recommendations as far as spacing fireworks from structures and people and so on. It's an explosive device, you know, and they cause harm. We see kids that hold firecrackers in their hand and don't get rid of it too soon and lose a hand. We see people that get eye injuries from bottle rockets and so on. So it's just really important to think smart when you're doing these types of things. And again, it comes down to supervision, adult supervision. Know what your kids are doing, you know, because you can really prevent them from getting harmed.
It sounds like a lot of it comes down to common sense, doesn't it?
In many ways, yeah, it does. You know, I'm not going to say it's going to prevent every injury. I'm not going to say it's going to prevent every death. But by and large, common sense approaches and adult supervision of kids will prevent lots of injuries and harm to kids.
Is the emergency department generally busier in the summer than winter months?
Always. So summertime is just, it's that time of year. People are outside. You know, fortunately, winter keeps people indoors. And even though we have bad weather up here and road hazards with the weather and so on, typically people resolve themselves to stay indoors and prevent it, right? So, but summertime, kids are out of school, they're in activities, they're in programs, the lakes are open, pools are open, monkey bars are around. We have more and more playground sets in people's houses today. So yeah, we typically expect to get busier. And you know, our highest number, I think we were close to 300 in a day, but in the summertime, it's not uncommon for us to see 250 patients a day. And again, in an emergency department, that's half the size of what it needs to be. And we're able to do that and do that with very high quality.
What is your daily census in the emergency department? And what is the yearly census?
You know, so average daily census is a number that we say picks from midnight to 11:59 the next night. And essentially what that does for us is gives us ideas on traffic flow and how we need to prepare staff and so on for the volumes coming in, as well as to build in some surge capacity for those major disasters, the highway wrecks and the chemical spills and whatever else that can come into the area. So the average daily census in the, say, winter time or fall and winter will typically be somewhere 220 patients per day and so on. And again, as soon as we start hitting this month, May, towards the end of May, June, July, we're booming. And essentially we could be seeing, you know, 250 people a day. That's a lot of people. And again, I think our max is close to 300. And again, lots of people with high complexity of illness, very, very sick people. Not this myth or belief that people don't belong in the emergency department. You know, that's a really low number today. I mean, systems like urgent care and the primary care doctors do a great job of keeping people out of the emergency department. So now when people actually come to us, they're really sick. I mean, it's not just an earache anymore. I mean, we might see an occasional one, but typically we'll see cardiac illnesses, strokes, traumas, broken bones, neck fractures. We'll see all that stuff. So an average daily census of that kind of acuity is a really high acuity emergency department.
That quick care is probably welcomed, right?
Sure. You know, I mean, the way those systems work is they get people care. They help out primary care immensely, you know, and because we don't have enough doctors in the area. But they become a referral source for us. So things that they're not comfortable with or too sick for them, they get sent to us. So that just adds to our acuity. So when you think about it, again, these myths that people are in the emergency department that don't belong, it's very few and far between. You know, I would say probably 5% of patients that come into an emergency department really could go somewhere else. The rest of them need to be there to be seen, or would need to be seen there within 24 to 48 hours to be seen, because their condition would evolve into something that really requires it. And oftentimes we're able to catch it. So if they do come early, we're able to catch it and prevent it from worsening.
UPMC Hammett is the region's only level 2 trauma center. Can you explain what that means and how it impacts your high census numbers?
Sure. So that's a great point. Now, we are the region's only trauma center. I don't really care to the designation of 2 or not. We function as a level 1 trauma center. We very rarely send anything out of Erie unless we don't have the resources for it. And that's typically a major system pediatric patient who's gotten a trauma that really needs a pediatric intensive care or burns. We don't have a burn center here. That typically are the only cases, or those are typically the only cases we really send out. Very few and far cardiac cases get sent out. Trauma cases very rarely get sent out. Neurological cases very rarely get sent out. So we have the resources to essentially function as a level 1. Now, what that means is we see everything. We see everything 120 miles around. And God forbid, if the lake wasn't there, we'd be even busier. I mean, we would get all that traffic in that direction as far as a patient population. So that insulates us, but the community has no access to traumatic care within 120 miles except for us. So that means we get everything. We get the major bus turnover, and we do it very well. One time on the I-90 accident, we saw 30 people in, I believe it was less than 2 hours, and really just had normal operating procedures for the rest of the emergency department. So what it also does for us is, being a trauma center, is it elevates the level of care for everything else. We've built upon the trauma systems and developed cardiac systems, stroke systems, infectious systems, critical care alert processes that mirror the trauma process. So we've been able to take that systemized approach from trauma apply it to cardiac, stroke, and all these other major medical conditions and improve those levels of care for those patients.
I'm sure the emergency department team trains for various crisis situations, even mass casualty situations, in order to be prepared for any emergency. Why is that type of training so important?
So, but it's funny, in this region, again, so 120 miles around, there's no trauma center, right? So our reality becomes our training. I mean, we very rare, even though we do, we very rarely need to put in a practice simulation exercise for emergency preparedness things. We've handled chemical spills. We've handled multiple car systems with multiple burns. We've handled just about everything that comes our way. We've handled a major gas leak, which was new for me. It was one of the things I never really prepped for or planned for, but the new construction, you know, had a major incident where we blew a hole in a pipe and essentially had to evacuate an emergency department, get people at areas of care, keep the doors open, and essentially then reoccupy that department in under a few hours. You know, those kind of things are pretty rare. They would essentially close a place. But we've been able, from our vast experiences in chemical spills, traumatic disasters, environmental disasters, we've been able to handle everything from a weather-related emergency to a major traumatic catastrophe in the area.
Doctor, you had a wonderful patient story in February involving a young cardiac patient whose life was saved by the efforts of your emergency department team and some special equipment. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
That was a great case, and that was actually my first day back to work. I was off work for a surgery, and my first day back to work, I walk in, and I just happen to see a crowd of people, and I see a lot of you know, my team working very feverishly to take care of somebody, and feeling complex because he was a young gentleman in cardiac arrest. They were not able to resuscitate him to get him back, and we had to start thinking of different options. And we pulled the trigger on some different options. Our ED doc, Dr. Camerata, our cardiologist, Quentin Orlando, Leo Fitzgibbons, cardiac surgeon, we essentially grouped up and figured out what this kid needed to save his life. And we broke down some barriers in the institution and just went ahead and did it. And essentially that guy, the next morning, was texting his friends in Erie. Not really sure what happened to him, but he was texting his friends the next day in Erie on full life support in Pittsburgh. And that's where we do use Pittsburgh, by the way. We use Pittsburgh and our resources to Pittsburgh to provide the quaternary care that we can't provide here. So the organ transplantation, such as cardiac and so on, if needed. But that's where we use a quaternary system. And that's why it's so good to be tied into a system like UPMC rather than when we were just Hammett alone. We could make those things happen, but it's a lot more streamlined when you have a system approach to things and you have resources at your fingertips. And that gentleman, as I mentioned, you know, I touch base with him every so often. He's doing well. He's in the community. His life may not be perfect in that he may be still having some remembrance issues related to the resuscitation or memories related to the resuscitation, but those typically go away in time. And he has his wife and family today. And again, you can't get that care anywhere else. You get it here at UPMC Hammett. You can get that care in maybe some other systems in bigger cities, but it would be harder to do even there because the level of inertia in bigger cities that occurs. So again, I go back to it. This emergency department becomes a diamond in the rough where we can do things and institute things very quickly, and we have the ability to be very nimble to make sure that we provide state-of-the-art care.
Are there other areas of UPMC Hammett that have benefited the emergency department?
Absolutely. It provides connections, right? It provides resources. So it gives us the added ability to have a depth of a database of essentially resources that we can tap into when we need to make the place function better.
Dr. May is Stop the Bleed Month, and UPMC Hammett has been instrumental in training people throughout the community. Can you briefly explain what this initiative is about?
Yep. So trauma is a leading cause of death in people under 50. And essentially what Stop the Bleed is an initiative that was put out by Homeland Security to activate the community, not just medical providers, but activate the community and arm them essentially with abilities to help save a life if someone was hemorrhaging to death. And essentially what that involves is a tourniquet process where we teach lay people how to use tourniquets. Because oftentimes, we're not, and don't get me wrong here, we're not asking people to go into the hot zone, But oftentimes people will be in the hot zone and will be stuck in the hot zone with a patient or a friend that is bleeding to death, and you could within seconds really prevent someone who would be dead in less than 5 minutes by just applying a simple tourniquet. And that's the initiative. So in Erie, I don't know the total numbers, but it's well over 6,000 people that have been educated, in addition to medical providers who've been educated on how to use tourniquets and so on. So that's the program. And essentially, there's a push nationally, not just locally, to arm the communities around the United States to be able to use tourniquets to save a life.
You have a training scheduled this month for the public, right?
Yep, May 23rd from 1 to 2 in the auditorium, there's a training, and it's a free training to the public.
Doctor, there are a lot of advantages to coming to the UPMC Hammett Emergency Department, right?
Absolutely. And you know, it goes back to a campaign we did a few years ago and said it matters where you go. We're a 24/7 trauma center, cardiac center, comprehensive stroke center. We have resources that were put in place to take care of patients 24/7, 365 days a year, holidays, weekends, nights, no matter what. There's a reason we put those things in place. Other centers that don't have those systems in place can't coordinate your care efficiently. They can provide you care, but they can't provide high quality care. They can't provide the level of efficiency and connections that we have to get you treated timely so you get the best outcome. For example, stroke. We're a comprehensive stroke center now. That means we have access to medical and interventional resources 24/7. Other systems can't say that or do that. And it matters, because when you're having a stroke, time is brain. Just like when you're having a cardiac or a heart attack, time is your muscle. Time is that heart muscle, and it's dying. So you want to get to the place that's going to get you the best outcomes. And we will get the best treatment, the best outcome. So it's not uncommon for medics to actually hear from a patient, oh no, I have this insurance and I need to go to this hospital. And quite frankly, in a situation like that, the medic will say, wait, you have a traumatic injury. We really should be taking you to the trauma center. And I really need to impress upon people in the community, listen, just listen to them, get here so we can take care of you. After we take care of you, we can always get you to the right place if your insurance has a particular issue that doesn't want to be covered at the hospital that you're in.
Doctor, if someone is interested in the training about the Stop the Bleed Month, where can they go?
So first and foremost, know that it's limited to 100 people just due to size constraints and to make the program effective. So when you hear the number, I'd like you to call and reserve. And that number is just calling the 814 area code and essentially calling 877-5662. Again, call, space is going to be limited. It's a free training, it's a cool training, and it can help save a life.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard Fridays at noon. Join us again next week as the Erie Regional Chamber and Growth Partnership is in the Business Spotlight.